Does he take your pictures?
Is your husband involved?
What does he even do?
Welcome to the Instagram Husband Podcast.
Welcome back to the Influencer Husband Podcast. This is the podcast where, well, we talk about internet culture. We talk about what it means to be an influencer husband. We talk about the influencer industry. I start sharing business tips and tricks for other influencers or internet consumers out there. If you like this podcast, do me a favor, go to iTunes, give it a review. I'll let you be honest about your opinion, but please give it 5 stars. Leave a comment or a note about what you would like to hear more on. I do read all of those comments. They're really important to me, and it helps me kind of steer the show in a direction that either other influencers or the consumers of influencer culture want to hear more about and want to know more about. Try and be as transparent as possible on this show. You know, I really like to mix both business and the influencer industry and focus on the niche of the influencer industry, both from a cultural perspective, a societal perspective, and then also a business perspective. And so leave me some notes on episodes ideas. I love to explore those. And so this week's episode, well, I'll just jump right in. So right now it is currently August of 2019, and this is the Influencer Husband reporting live. I want everyone to kind of do an exercise with me really quick. What I'm going to do is I'm grabbing my iPhone right now. I'm opening up Instagram. And here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give it, you know, I'm on my newsfeed, and I'm going to give everything 3 full index finger scrolls. And as I go, what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you all what I am seeing. Okay, so the first thing I see here is I see my wife, Dani Austin. She's currently in Napa, sipping wine, it looks like, with some other influencer friends. She always ends up at the top of my feed. These girls seem to be in Disneyland, also some other influencers. Something Navy is in the Hamptons. No shade there, honestly. I think she's awesome. Some Onion articles. Jay Alvarez is going to be in Ibiza. Popular this time of year. Also, don't judge me for following him. Dallas, hashtag relatable. Some people in Positano, some fashion bloggers with designer bags, Bali. So I want you to ask yourself what you all see. And I don't know who you follow, but I think that we can all agree that in the year of 2019, life seems to be pretty good on the gram. I think that there's a lot of travel. There's a lot of luxury. There's a lot of wealth. And you know, while some of it is probably fake, I think a lot of it probably is not. And I think it's, you know, the purpose of this episode is that what I wanted that exercise to do was I wanted to be a sign of a strong economy. Because I think that for all intents and purposes, you know, the economy of 2019 is very, very strong. In fact, it's so strong that I'm going to read off some facts here. I clipped these. Last May, the U.S. economy streak of more than 8 years of economic growth became the nation's longest, on record. The decade-long expansion has generated over 20 million jobs. So this year, Generation Z, the population born between 1997 and 2012, will make up about 40% of U.S. consumers by next year. And those consumers in Generation Z are actually expected to contribute as much as $143 billion in direct spending. And of course, consumer spending is at a healthy all-time high. So consumers are spending, and so are businesses, which means that the influencer marketing is at an all-time high as well. You know, national advertisers, this is a quote from Forbes that says, national advertisers are so enamored with influencer marketing that a full 75% of their companies currently employ the discipline. And almost half, 43%, are planning to increase their spending on it in the next 12 months. This is a report from the Association of National Advertisers reported last year. One analyst even predicts the influencer marketing industry will reach $10 billion in 2020. So being in the industry and seeing, you know, having friends in the industry and, you know, experiencing the industry firsthand, I will say that it does seem that there are a lot of opportunities out there. But you know, I had this idea for an episode because, you know, when things are good, I think it's always hard for me to believe that they're going to last. And I know that that sounds cynical and pessimistic, but I also think it's just smart. You know, I think that there's a lot of opportunity out there. And I think that the best thing that you can do is not expect the bad to last forever and not expect the good to last forever and just, you know, sort of become stable and remain stable in the in-between. So I was scrolling through my feed and there was this little snippet on, I think it was like an Instagram IGTV or something like that from Gary V. And I tried to find it. If I find it, I will include it for my editor to put into this podcast. But I did find a quote that he said. It says, I'm excited for a recession because now people are living fake lives. They're keeping up with the Joneses. When there's a correction, everyone is going to get back to the right mental place and do what they actually love to do instead of chasing a fake lifestyle. And I really thought about that, you know, from just an influencer standpoint, but also just as a human being, you know, who has been through one recession. You know, I think that we're, most of our listeners are probably young-ish to you know, remember it, but there's a lot of doom and gloom out there about kind of this looming recession coming. And so, you know, what I wanted to do, what I had an idea for an episode was I wanted to go over 5 benefits of a coming recession specifically for the influencer space. So these are 5 things that I would see as a positive outcome coming from a recession in the influencer marketing space. Obviously, this is very personal, you know, to my life and to my wife's career and stuff. But I still think that there are pros to this kind of happening and coming about. So whether you're a content creator or a content consumer, I think that all of these are relevant, but I'm just going to jump in. So benefit number 1, a recession will bring us back to reality. So when, you know, my wife, Dani Austin, started her channel, she did so 7 years ago from her college dorm room. And back then, you didn't get on the internet because it was cool or especially not a career path at the time. You know, in fact, I think that she hid almost all of it entirely from her sorority at the time. You know, I think that, you know, people ended up finding out and making fun of her from other sororities. But, you know, the original time of the internet was about connection. You know, and so when I came into her life 3 years later, her audience wasn't some distant thing. You know, it was, you know, when she introduced herself to me, you know, and the audience was sort of introduced to me too early on in us dating, it was, you know, she almost introduced her audience as her girls. You know, and at that time it was a much smaller audience. I think it was probably about 20,000 followers on Instagram and that she had a YouTube following, but she introduced them as her girls. And, you know, our entire first year of dating, I wasn't really that involved in, you know, her career. I had my own career at the time and, you know, she was kind of moving on a path with them, but I did have to navigate the time she invested into her girls. You know, she was always talking about providing value to her girls and connecting with her girls. And, you know, 2 years later, you know, we've been dating for about 2 years now and she moved into a tiny shoebox apartment, you know, and still had her girls. And, you know, at that time, I'm sure her girls grew and the number grew and stuff like that. But, you know, when we got engaged, her girls were involved. You know, when we got married, her girls were tuning in live. And, you know, her girls and the relationship she had with her girls was that she was walking through life with these girls, right? These women, this audience that she had. And she was constantly trying to provide value. It wasn't about growth. It wasn't about money. It was about, you know, finding a connection, finding a relatability, you know, her helping them by giving them tips and tricks from nutrition to fitness, et cetera, but them also, you know, responding back. It was a two-way relationship. And it wasn't about the audience size. It was more of an act of service. And, you know, I think that when brands started getting involved, and I can't remember when this was and when it really started to take off, but I think that it was probably maybe 2 years ago, you know, when brands really started to get involved and influencer marketing became a thing, and the term influencer even became a thing at that time. It became a job to a lot of people or a career path to a lot of people. And so then I think the travel, the luxury, the opportunities for sponsorships now, you know, kind of created a muddy environment of what I knew, you know, of Dani and her audience, of just connecting with her girls again. And, you know, Dani, I got to give her credit. You know, she turns down so much for this particular reason, you know, just to kind of maintain an authenticity, you know, with her audience and people that not just her now, but like we really care about. But I tell Dani's story because I think it's a reminder that, you know, the most authentic connection can be done without luxury, without all of this travel, without new mansions that influencers are buying. I think it can be done in a shoebox apartment or a college dorm room because I've witnessed it. And, you know, I think that a recession is scary, but a recession really has the ability to kind of, you know, bring influencers back to the core value of being an influencer, which is serving an audience and sharing a message, right? And sharing their message. And so for those out there right now, I think that are, and Gary Vee made this point, I don't really want to take credit for this specific part of what he said, but, you know, he was alluding to this idea for the influencers out there that are building these brands on Lambos or hopping fences to take pictures with private planes and, you know, the travel and luxury. And if you can afford it outside of this industry from, you know, a generational wealth perspective or something alike, you know, you do you. Like, if that is truly your life, then I encourage everyone to keep moving down that path. And it's, you know, probably interesting for a lot of people, but so much of it just seems to be fake or contrived or creating this unrealistic, intangible level of aspiration that doesn't seem fair. And so I personally wouldn't advise anyone to nurture, you know, an audience to get to know you based on those things if those things are not true to your upbringing and to your daily life. And so even if it is, you know, that is your brand and that is what you grew up with and what you're used to, I would just strongly urge most people to understand that those things really aren't as satisfying as you think. And second, if you are building your brand on that, I don't even think it's a good brand strategy because you're only able to relate to the top 1% of the world. And so, you know, idealistically, I think that a recession or a desert season will allow for us to open up our feeds and see a much more accurate depiction of reality as consumer spending slows, as the brand deals slow down a little bit. I think that it's going to force a lot of influencers into, I hope that they don't drive themselves deeper into debt by creating this lavish, fake lifestyle. But I think that idealistically, I want it to sort of decrease this idea of comparison and envy that I think that the internet, and especially Instagram, breeds, and, you know, replace it with a greater sense of gratitude as, you know, you see some of your favorite influencers just living normal, simpler lives. And I think that consumers can start to understand that joy can be found in a much simpler state of life. And hey, I think that maybe at the end of the day, this means, you know, for all of the influencer husbands out there, that our wives will be home a lot more too. So the second point, so the second benefit of a recession is that I think that there will be a thinning of the herd. So I think that the influencer market is absolutely saturated. There's no way to think about it differently. I think that every man, woman, and child is feeling called to, or you know, told to start a blog by a friend. And I've heard some crazy stories, honestly, just from back home, that there's females and males alike, you know, quitting their jobs, you know, partnering with their spouses, and to pursue a job being an influencer full time. And I'm like, well, how many followers do you have? And it's like 1,000. And I'm like, okay, well, so first of all, I will not be the person that says that you should not chase your dreams, right? I believe in anyone's ability to become a blogger or influencer. I believe that God has given you a voice. And I believe that, you know, you can create content, you know, that will impact others. I think I'm more just of a proponent of doing that within the confines of a sort of prudent and fiscally responsible plan for your life. So absolutely chase your dream to be an influencer if that is your dream. But personally, I just would advise, don't quit your corporate job to start a blog, you know, especially in 2019. I think that walking away from a reliable salary that could be used to fund a photographer or a fill-in Instagram husband if you're not married, and benefits along with that to be an influencer is not just chasing a dream. It's being foolish, right? I think that there's a way to sort of dip your toe in the water of being an influencer and then escalating or transitioning out of your job as that, you know, seems to be a fit, you know, as a career path. But I will say, I must disclaim that I think Danny and I differ on this point quite a bit. Danny's so an all or nothing girl and believes in order to succeed, you really have to leap and make it work. The only way to make it work is to leap, and those just can't live apart. And I think that I'm into more calculated risk and hedge bets, which means that doing something like I just said, of leaving your corporate job, you know, when you have less than 5,000 followers and you've only made $300 a month off, you know, reward style or something like that. It feels to me like the equivalent of dropping out of college and moving to Hollywood. And for the right personality and the right person, you can do it. But I don't know. I will have to be the first one to say that this life is way harder than it looks. And anyone who tries to put out content on a consistent 7-day basis will attest that this is a lifestyle, not a career. And, you know, I think many people in the sort of 2019 economy are seeing the money being invested into this industry, and they're trying to kind of get their piece, if you will. You know, I was talking to an intern at a major influencer platform out there who accidentally told me that they were onboarding about 1,000 new influencers to their platform, their partnership platform, per week. So, you know, in a stable economic conditions, I think that there truly is a belief and probably even a reality that the market is big enough for everyone to succeed in some capacity. And because of the marketing budgets of brands in times of high consumer spending, I think that that actually is to a certain degree true. So, you know, if you're a nano influencer out there and you have 2,000 followers because maybe you were popular in high school or college, and those are kind of carrying over from your like real social life, I think that you can easily in 2019 start posting outfit pictures once a day, brand yourself a nano influencer, and to some degree of certainty, I think that you could make some income from it. So let's say at the end of 2019, you know, a recession starts settling in and consumer spending is going to start decreasing and brands and companies are going to have to start cutting expenses. And I think that marketing usually is one of the first company or corporate budget categories to go or to have their spending slashed. And so what I think that is going to happen is that brands are going to have to start being more careful and select their partnerships, which I'll talk about in a second, more carefully and more logically, and there's not going to be as much to go around, which means that not everyone is going to be compensated in the same way for their role as an influencer as in 2019. Now, I'm not some monster that is wishing for a recession so that people can't pursue their dreams of being a blogger. Not by any means is that what I'm doing. I'm saying that what I'm excited for is that I think it will force more creativity and commitment and originality in the space. So right now, I think that there's somewhat of a formula that you could follow if you really wanted to start growing, especially if you're a female wanting to get into the fashion space. So I think that the formula goes something like this. You go to Nordstrom, you look at a mannequin or a catalog online, you get an exact outfit that has at least one piece under $50. Then you go to Starbucks and you get either a colorful drink or a plastic cup. You stand against a white wall, particularly in the shade. You write a caption with a song lyric that is between 3 and 5 lines. You pop on the Danny Austin preset, plug. You write a cute caption, you post it, and you do that once a day for 30 days straight, and you see what happens. And I think that you will start to see growth. You'll see support from other females. The brands will see that, you know, you'll be considered a nano influencer. And, you know, I think that you could start seeing some hope in your career as an influencer. And I've seen that over the past year. I've seen it, you know, people go from 5,000 to 100,000 to now they're at 150,000. And it's very formulaic. But the problem is I would say that there are not hundreds, there are thousands of new bloggers who are doing that same formula on a daily, regular basis, right? And they're onboarding by the thousands, you know, every single week that goes by. And especially as the media starts covering the influencer industry and things like that. And so, you know, I'm not against competition between bloggers by any means, but I'm against kind of saturation of what feels like a lot of bots. And I think that Danny and I both are believers in the idea that we were all kind of made unique and, you know, that God has given each of us a testimony and each of us a story. And I think that what is Danny's story, you know, she would be, I think that Danny's really good at not trying to tell someone else's story. She's really good at saying, hey, this is my story. I don't have someone else's story. This is my story. And I think that there's something inherently good about forcing new influencers to find their own voice in the market to me. So idealistically, when it comes to a recession, I feel in some small way that a recession would allow for people to feel less alone, to feel good enough just as they were made to be. And I think that influencers who are here for the right reasons will stay. And I think that a recession will cause people to say, am I doing this for the money or am I not? And if you don't do it for the money or for the fame and you're doing it for the right reasons, you know, when those things diminish just naturally because of an economic cycle, I think you will keep doing it anyway. And I think that those people who are creative and they're original and they're pursuing being an influencer as more of a mission or to relate to people or to nurture an audience and to really take care of their people, I think that those are the type of influencers that we want on the internet. And I think that the recession is a centrifugal force that will cause that naturally. So the third benefit of a recession to the industry is what I'm calling better product partnership market fit. And I'll explain why I'm calling it that long, dumb sentence right now. So, you know, when I used to work in tech in Austin specifically, I think everyone would always talk about product market fit. And it was a term coined by one of the most successful and famed venture capitalist of today named Mark Andreessen. And I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. I think I am. But he defined the term as follows. So product market fit means being in a good market with a product that can satisfy that market. So you basically, there is a product, you know, take one of the many favorite consumer products. So Away suitcases, that's one of my favorite consumer products, consumer branded products right now. And then there's a market. So let's say the market is females ages 23 to 35 that have a household income of 60,000 plus a year, right? So the job of every brand is to take that product, find the market niche, and push into that market where they have found that perfect product market fit. So how do they do that? They do that through marketing. So they can run Facebook ads to females ages 23 to 35. They can take out ad space at airports where those females may travel through, or most relevant to this podcast, they can partner with an influencer that has an audience of that demographic. So from the influencer side, if they have an audience that they are serving and a brand that said audience loves, gives a discount code, you know, for Away suitcases or Casper mattresses or a beauty product, it is a mutually beneficial relationship for influencer marketing to occur in a way that is natural, organic, mutually beneficial for both the brand and the influencer's audience that makes sense. So if this is the case, why do we hate this idea of hashtag ad or sponsor? Well, you know, I think that we're just saturated by it. We're fatigued by it. With the meteoric rise and success of influencer marketing, what has happened is that brands and companies are, and their marketing departments are putting processes in place that do not properly vet influencers and if they're a good fit for the brand. So as companies do, it's not their fault. It's just what companies do. They are building systematic processes that survey influencers based on available metrics. So they're looking at things like follower count, engagement, which engagement is a culmination of likes and comments. And I'd say at a quick glance, they're looking at aesthetics. So, you know, i.e., do they look and appear to be within the age demographic we're trying to hit, you know, within the state of values? It's a very quick hit at a glance chalk up of an influencer, right? So then as companies do, especially with venture-backed companies, you know, just like Away is and just like Casper Mattresses and some of these other brands that are scaling, they scale fast. That's the whole point of what they're doing, is that they are given a huge chunk of money and they are set out to acquire customers, whether it's a profitable venture to do that or not. It's almost like we'll deal with profitability later. So, okay, to recontextualize, so it's 2019, consumer spending is at a high, you know, economic conditions are at a high. So you have multiple brands sending out product and emails and partnership opportunities at a massive rate to this industry of influencers. And they're throwing around free product, they're throwing around budgets, et cetera. And then you have influencers basically getting an email that's a yes or no question to either product or cash compensation. And again, remember, this is a full-time job for a lot of influencers out there, my wife included, and being forced to say yes or no, right? And now the best influencers out there typically are those that have been doing this for a long time and will say no to between 60 and 75% of all partnership inquiries to maintain the integrity within their audience. But remember, there are thousands of new bloggers every single day onboarding into this industry. And so many are saying yes to everything, knowing that this is somewhat of a gold rush, I think, you know, and then we see hashtag ad and hashtag sponsored all of the time because it's everywhere. So what we see in this industry and across our Instagram feeds is we see blogger A, we'll call her, committing to Away Suitcases as an example of a brand being their favorite, quote unquote, favorite suitcase, typically in the form of, oh my gosh, I love this suitcase. Only to say that Samsonite the next week is their actually new favorite suitcase. On the consumer side, what does that do to us? That really, really confuses us. It helps us sort of, I think, be a little bit more critical and cynical about the industry of like, is that really your favorite? Can I really trust you? What's really going on here? And I think that this is all happening in a time of a very healthy and stable economy. Brands are moving fast and spending faster, and influencers of all sizes are saying yes to too many things. You can only have one favorite. The idea of having a favorite is that it insinuates one thing. And I am saying this knowing that my wife is probably guilty of this too. Now, she does a good job of saying no, but I guarantee you she's confused you all too sometimes. Now let's pretend for a second that the recession has just hit, early 2020. Marketing, you know, like we talked about earlier, marketing budgets are slashed. Do you think that the CEOs of these companies are going to say to their marketing teams now, hey now, times are tough, time to produce fewer sales and I'll be okay with it because you have less of a marketing budget? Heck no. They're going to say, I expect the same results, but now you have a third to spend on marketing. We are going to see when a recession hits a much better example of product partnership market fit. This is going to mean that Away isn't going to be able to partner with just anyone and everyone anymore. They are going to slow down and they're going to look for those perfect fit partnerships. I see this as an overall win when the recession hits for everyone in the long run, to be honest. I see this causing companies to be smarter about who they work with and have deeper, more intangible vetting processes that just take time to figure out. For example, Danny could end up on the email list or the outreach list for a hair extension company easily based on her follower count, based on her engagement, you know, based on a quick look at her aesthetic. But it would take them some investigating to understand she is suffering from hair loss and therefore wearing wigs now, which would make it a not good partnership. I think a lot of this is being missed because so many companies are pushing into this space too fast. I see influencers in a recession state going back to being more organic with their content because the brand partnerships just aren't as readily available anymore. And I see the content consumers benefiting the most as influencing goes back to influencing about important life topics versus consumptions and product pushes. So that brings me to my final point on the benefit of the recession, and that's a slowing of consumption. I am not your spokesperson on global warming or environmental consequences of different industries. I think that there is plenty of coverage on that issue from some of the mainstream outlets almost every single day. But before anyone passionate about that topic puts me on blast, let me finish my point. I think that you will see I'm communicating my mission in this podcast in a parallel path to your mission. Speaking from the heart, I have felt the weight this year that things don't make you happy. And this point is going to be a little bit more heartfelt and personal to Danny and I and what we've gone through in our lives. But every year since I started my career at 22 or 23, I've hit some significant milestone, whether that was a title milestone or a financial milestone or a personal milestone. Last year, Danny and I bought a new house together. We've driven new cars. We've traveled to places far and wide outside of Dallas that I never thought I'd go before. I've gotten new clothes, new toys, and she has had the same. I think about our lives now at a very healthy time in our career and our provision in comparison to when we were both living in shoebox apartments out of college, grinding our way to this point. And I compare the level of joy and happiness that we have with all of these new things in comparison to when we didn't have these new things. And what I truly feel confident enough to say is that our joy and happiness has nothing to do with any of those things. We were just as happy as a couple striving and dreaming back then with almost nothing as we are now. And so money does have some ability to reduce stress, and I'm not going to pretend like it does not. I think that that's insulting and it's not fair to the people who are truly struggling and striving to get ahead in life, but it does not make you sustainably happy. And I'm afraid that Instagram and the internet is tricking a lot of people into saying that it does. I'm afraid that people are driving themselves into debt for new outfits that bloggers are pushing or a trip that they can't afford. And listen, this is coming from a husband whose wife has a portion of her career in being a valuable fashion blogger to all. That means that she is linking and selling and asking you to swipe up on products for a small, clarifying small, commission. It is in our best interest and my best interest to keep you consuming. And I am telling you that we do not want you to if it forces you into debt. This is one piece of the recession that I'm telling you is going to help consumers and content consumers more than it is influencers. Many influencers, ourselves included, rely on commissions to sustain our career path. But when consumer spending slows, it's going to hurt the industry. Okay, we're going to feel it. Other bloggers are going to feel it. Everyone's going to feel it. But I think that bloggers honestly can afford to slow down from the pace of life that a commission-based income causes. I'll say it again. I think that bloggers can afford to slow down from the pace of life that a commission income demands. I think that the hardest part of a commission income is that there's no ceiling, which means that I think that it is driving some bloggers crazy. I think that if and when the recession comes and consumer spending starts to slow, it will still be mutually beneficial to all, because I know that for a fact, in a consumption and commission culture alike, it really just is never enough. It's never enough commission from the blogger with unlimited ceiling on what they can earn, and it's never enough for the consumer who can buy whatever they want, whether it drives them into debt or not. So those are my four points on what is going to happen and the predictions of how a recession state economy could affect the influencer economy in a positive way. So as you read all of these articles online about a recession coming, don't get swept up in the doom and gloom. If there's anything that Danny and I have learned in 2019, it's that everything is cyclical. The good is not forever and the bad is not forever. Life is just kind of this weird collection of different seasons, and I think that business operates the same. So if you're an influencer in the desert down cycle, I think it's going to make you more creative and probably more grounded in reality. If you're a consumer, I'm sure that we're all ready to see a few less selfies in Santorini in exchange for something a little bit more relatable. Now, will someone get my wife back from her trip to Napa, please?